The title of the seminar is on transportation fuels life cycle, and this is using something called the GREET model, which stands for greenhouse gases, regulated emissions, energy use in transportation. Okay, and the focus of the seminar is to especially talk about the fuel cycle of this GREET model, talk about new fuel pathways, especially biofuels, as well as some critical issues in the well-to-wheel analysis of these fuels. We're really glad to have our speaker today, who is Dr. Ignacio Paulo Rivera. He has had a fairly distinguished career. He's done his undergraduate work from Catalonia, from the Polytechnic University there, PhD with Ross Sweeney at the University of Wisconsin, and then has held a number of positions all over the computational process engineering industry, at AspenTech, at HyperTech, as a postdoctoral researcher with Paul Barton at MIT, positions at BP, and now he's at he's the principal environmental engineer at Argonne National Laboratory. So Ignacio is going to join us remotely, signified by this laptop on our desk. The slides are here, and Ignacio, it's all yours.
Thank you, Larry. Let me just start by thanking both Larry and Ignacio for inviting me to give this seminar. I appreciate very much the opportunity. It's going to be probably a little different than the other talks that have a more strong optimization content touching on the energy side. This is more a pure modeling in a slightly different field, which is life cycle analysis. But I think it'll be interesting for everybody. As Larry said, transportation fuels life cycle analysis using the GREET model is the title of the talk, and I'll focus, as he very well pointed out, on the fuel cycle well-to-wheel analysis and how we do that using our GREET model. GREET, which, as Larry said, slide number two here, greenhouse gases, regulated emissions, and energy in transportation model. It's one, if not the most well-known life cycle analysis tools in the transportation area. It's been sponsored and supported by U.S. DOE, so the Department of Energy, more specifically EERE, since its inception in 1995. It's a freely downloadable and open model to everybody. So that means you can go to the web address that I show here, greet.es.anl.gov, and you can download the model and all its supporting documentation for free. All it requires is that you register with an email so we can keep track on who's using it or how many people. As you see, there's about over 14,000 registered GREET users right now worldwide, although it's very much a U.S.-focused model, as one can understand from the DOE and sponsorship. The latest one was released this last October, and I think in the coming months we're going to put out a bug-fixing release, but we're constantly updating both the numbers and the calculations in it. As you can see from the schematic, it covers both fuel cycle and vehicle cycle, what we know it as GREET 1 and GREET 2 series. I'll focus very much on the fuel cycle since it's the work that I do and that I'm more familiar with. Slide number 3 shows the three different aspects that GREET focuses on. First one is energy use. In our case, we subdivide that in different types of energy. Total energy, that means the overall energy of all types, and then subdivide it into fossil energy and renewable energy. And fossil energy, in this case, further subdivided in energy or fuel of petroleum origin, natural gas, and coal. The main reason behind the separation is for being able to evaluate issues like security, energy independence, energy security, and so forth. The second big point that Greek calculated is greenhouse gas emissions, commonly abbreviated as GHGs. We track three gases as greenhouse gas contributors: CO2, methane, and N2O. And we report greenhouse gas emissions in equivalent grams of CO2. So we add up CH4 and N2O with their global warming potentials. And we do so in an explicit way, so one can see how much the contribution from the different greenhouse gases is. The third aspect, we track criteria pollutants, in our case, VOCs, so volatile organic compounds, CO, nitrous oxide, NOx, particulate matter, different diameters, 10 and 2.5, and sulfur oxides. And those criteria pollutants are also estimated separately for us in total, so the total amount of emissions, and the urban, so the subset of emissions that affects urban centers. Slide number four, just a little slide why this topic of low of LCA for fuels is a fairly hot topic. 2007 Energy Independence and Security Act introduced or legally qualifies the terms of low carbon fuel standards. It introduces legally the idea of reduction of greenhouse gas emissions from conventional fuels. So, therefore, it requires that, for example, new ethanol produced from corn has to have a 20% reduction of greenhouse gas emission respect to the conventional fuels. To qualify for cellulosic biofuels, it has to be a 60% reduction, biomass-based diesel, 50%, and so forth. EPA is the authority that will decide whether different pathways qualify for the different in the different reduction buckets, but having a tool that allows this calculation to be done by the process developers or by researchers and not just wait for the EPA blessing is very helpful and very useful. Besides that, GREET has also been entering some of the legislation, most notably in California, by CARB. There's a modification of the GREET tool using California-specific parameters that is actually called for in some of the rules in California to qualify for biofuels and different low-carbon fuel standards. Slide 5, just a mention of some of the key LCA issues and that very much affect transportation fuel LCA. The system boundary is an old issue in the LCA world, so basically where do we draw the box that allows us to do the life cycle? So LCA means life cycle analysis. The box defines what the life cycle is. Traditional fuels is well to wheels, but where do we decide to draw that box? It's going to have very big effects on our results. Technology choices, it's an important one, and it's becoming, I believe, more important. Up to a few years ago, the LCA world or transportation fuels LCA was focused on existing technologies. So, you know, what is the footprint of conventional fuels versus corn ethanol and so forth? We are working more and more and looking at evaluating LCAs with processes at the R&D stage. So processes that do not exist practically, they don't even exist in the pilot stage. At best, we might have a somewhat detailed process model, but we want to already evaluate its LCA in order to know what the potential for greenhouse gas and for energy consumption reductions are in there. Co-product, or how to address co-product and transportation fuels it's an important issue, and I will actually show some detail later on. Basically, when looking at LTA, we have to look at the main fuel as the actual product, and the other co-products affect what gets charged to this main product. Life cycle analysis methodologies is an important topic as well. GREET is a traditional attributional LCA. That means that what goes into the life cycle gets attributed to the products and co-products being made. So it kind of uses a process-centric perspective. Consequential LCA is a more modern, more complex way of looking at LCA in which the consequences of the process or the pathway are what determines the footprint of it.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
What is the attributional basis that GREET uses? In other words, are emissions allocated to co-products on the basis of value or mass or
what? Okay, yeah, that's what I thought you were asking. It is quite a hybrid system, so normally it tends to bias towards an energy allocation, although sometimes we use displacement. And in very many cases, in all of them, we allow the user to select the type of allocation for that specific case. I'll mention a little bit later because I have some examples a fairly detailed description of how GREET does its allocation between co-products. But we always do it in a very explicit way and tend to give the user the ability to change the default allocation. Okay? Slide 6, just an example of the boundary, of the life cycle system boundary point that I brought up before. This is conventional petroleum, conventional gasoline in this case, schematic, in which we started with exploration and recovery, which it's really exploration and production on a petroleum, I mean, on a petroleum industry words. So it includes the exploration and production, transportation of the crude, refining of the petroleum, transfer and distribution of the gasoline to gasoline combustion in the vehicle. In all of these steps, there is a number of things that have an effect. For example, there is a number of energy sources that are consumed in each one of these steps. So that the production of a fuel at all of the steps consumes part of the same fuel plus other fuels. So it's an iterative type of calculation that needs to be performed. There is feedstock coming in, for example, exploration and recovery. There's extra materials going in, and especially in the refining, there's going to be catalysts. There is going to be other feedstocks. And then there's the not-so-technical and more policy and even political issues such as the effect of possible military operations can have. Now, people, it's a hot debate topic whether or to how extent military operations could have or might have an impact in the exploration and recovery, especially part of conventional fuel production should be evaluated in the life cycle of the fuel. As comparison, next slide number 7 shows a similar schematic for corn ethanol, so usual corn grain ethanol, and it shows a bit the difference between what is a conventional fuel life cycle boundary and biofuel life cycle boundary. In this case, there's some extra items to be taken into consideration First and foremost is the carbon or the CO2, the carbon dioxide cycle in the atmosphere. So there is a so besides considering the CO2 emissions during both the fermentation and the combustion and any steps in between, one has to consider the credits of the carbon fixated by the photosynthesis of the grown biomass. So that limits or that discounts the emissions of CO2 in the rest of the process. At the same time, issues like fertilizer manufacturing has energy inputs for farming, emissions for of nitrogen emissions from the soil and water streams due to the fertilizer and biomass on the field are important. Change in soil carbon, the whole topic of direct and indirect land use changes, and then an important topic of co-products, in this case, important one, DGS or DDGS in the production of fuel ethanol, which produces animal feed that needs to be taken into account. Just as an example of the type of life cycle, the type of system boundaries we're looking at in transportation fuels. Slide number 8 gives an overview of the fuel production pathways that are incorporated in GREET as of the last release in October 2011. So we have a number of feedstuffs. Those are represented by the yellow boxes here, petroleum, natural gas, a number of biological biomass feedstuffs, corn, sugarcane, soybeans, renewable natural gas, an important one, cellulosic biomass, also a very growing. Some of the new ones in the last release is algae, which there is a big effort within DOE and to algal fuels and quantification of their possibilities. And as I said, that's a good example of life cycle of processes or pathways at the R&D stage, since there is no commercial production of algal fuels and we're still quite a few years away. As you can see from each one of the feedstocks, there is a number of fuel productions that can be produced. And all of these are actual in GREET right now. So one can compare and use. Next, slide number 9 is an elaboration a bit more, just looking beyond just the fuel cycle. One of the few insights into the vehicle cycle that I will give you here. So all those fuels from the feedstocks that I presented in the last slide can actually be used in a number of different vehicles. For example, conventional gasoline is used in conventional spark ignition engine vehicles and also in spark ignition direct engine vehicles, so more modern direct injection type of vehicles. Same thing, diesel or conventional diesel can be used in compression, so regular diesel or direct injection vehicles, or hybrid diesel vehicles. And those uses of the same fuel are going to give very different results when comparing both the fuel and the fuel, even just on the fuel cycle, but including the actual fuel utilization step, as I showed in the system boundary. Slide number 10, here we'll go, I'll move from the more basic description of LCAs and a bit of GREET capabilities into the more detailed description of how we calculate things within GREET. This gives you a kind of an overview of the architecture of GREET. The GREET one for the fuel cycle model for well to wheels for light duty vehicles right now is a large Excel based model that interacts with some other modules. The main one being GREET 2, which is another large Excel model, that's quite as large than the fuel cycle by quite a bit. That's the vehicle cycle model. I won't touch that much at all. The other extra modules around our main grid one is our stochastic simulation tool, which is an Excel add-on that allows us to enter statistical distributions of some of the main parameters that go into grid in order to do a stochastic simulation of the life cycle analysis. Grid C Corp is a new module that allows for carbon calculation for land use change for biofuels. Grid APD allows us to do all the fuel process description and then do the life cycle in grid. And then there is a basic GUI that allows people who want to interact directly with the Excel sheet to actually do some simple simulations. So in the next slide, I will describe a bit more in detail what goes into the grid one Excel model, so the fuel cycle modeling. So slide number 11 introduces this concept of hierarchical definition of product, pathway, process, technology, and fuels and material inputs. I have to mention here that the process and pathway is somewhat different to what we understand normally. I think in more traditional chemical engineering, there is no such or not such a clear distinction of what in the life cycle is process that and pathway. So I'll try to be a little explicit about those two. So I think this hierarchical definition with this pyramid here is useful. The main issue or the main question at the grid life cycle level is that all the energy consumption or the energy uses are defined at the process level, but the emissions are defined at the technology level. And I think this is going to be clarified a little bit more with the slide after that. So slide number 12, let's just start with fuels and material inputs at the bottom of the pyramid. This is fairly straightforward. Fuels are fuels, you know, gasoline, coal, natural gas, you know, defined by their properties, in this case, heating value. Grid by default uses lower heating value, but we can use higher heating value just as well. Carbon mass percentage, sulfur percentage, etc. Those are characteristics of the fuels that grid takes into account. Biomass, it's both a fuel and a material input. Cellulosic, like woody materials, herbaceous type materials. Electricity is another fuel input. Nuclear fuels. Fertilizers are also material inputs that carry an energy content or an upstream energy content. So fairly straightforward. Slide number 13 introduces the concept of technologies. So as far as grid is concerned, technologies are things like what you see on the right side, on the right-hand side of this slide. Boilers, engines, turbines, tractors, trucks, anything that consumes a fuel and produces an emission in this case. So all technologies have associated emission factors, which are defined as the emissions of a specific species per unit of fuel used by that technology. Some notes here, CO2 is always calculated by a carbon balance, and sulfur oxides can also be calculated by a sulfur balance. Next slide, number 14, has a similar definition of an emissions factor for technologies, expanding the concept of light-duty vehicles. So in this case, light-duty vehicles used fuel, produce some emissions, and travel a number of miles in our case.
I have another question.
Sure.
How does grid deal with the cases where the emissions factor changes dramatically depending on how the technology is used? For example, plug-in hybrid vehicles that drive on electricity for short distances, gasoline for long distances, or plants
yes.
that have different emissions at different capacity factors?
Normally, we would define an average of what, and you could define different averages to compare the different vehicles. But when you're doing the life cycle for a specific vehicle, it would be a specific vehicle with a specific set of conditions. And you could then do two simulations at different conditions and then compare the results of both of those. Okay? Or you could do the extreme conditions would be, you know, emissions when it's going fully on an electrical charge versus fully on non-electrical charge and anything in between. Slide number 15 moves up from technologies to processes. As we can see here, processes deal especially with the energy consumption. So they need to have defined an output-input relation of energy, so how much energy is consumed to what, how much energy is produced, so an efficiency, and a process fuel share, so that what, how much of what process, of what fuel does a process use. And then also a need to have a technology share for each process fuel in order to calculate emissions. This is better in more detail shown in slide number 16 in an example. Here we have a crude upstream operation, so a crude production or crude recovery in our case called operation, in which we use a number of fuels and we produce crude. So in this case, what we have is that the crude being produced or recovered contains energy that equals 98% of the total amount of energy going into our process. And that's what we define as efficiency. So the energy into the energy brought in from all these residual oil, diesel, natural gas, and electricity going into our process comes out 98% of that in the form of crude. That allows us to calculate the total process fuel used, TPF, and then define process fuel shares. So this total process fuel used, 2% comes from residual oil, 15% from diesel, 62% from natural gas, and 21% from electricity. Furthermore, from here, and going to slide 17, we can go to emissions accounting, which then we need to go down to the technology share level in order to calculate our emissions. So, for example, all the residual oil in this case is used in a boiler. So 100% is used in a boiler, so all the emissions of the residual oil will be affected by the emission factor from the boiler. However, that total amount of diesel going in, these 3,000 BTUs of diesel, 75% of them are used in reciprocating engines, while 25% are used in turbines. Engines, reciprocating engines and turbines, are going to have a different emission factor, therefore contributing differently. The diesel burned, or the each BTU of diesel burned in each one of these technologies is going to contribute differently to the emissions. And, you know, one can write this simple emission summation for all technologies, K's, and fuel J's for each pollutant I. And here you have a simple example. So, fairly straightforward accounting, but one has to be quite careful in order to estimate the emissions going down to the technology level. Next slide, number 18, further elaborates on the crude recovery unit, showing that we not only have to account for the energy in the fuels, such as residual oil, diesel, natural gas, and electricity, but we also need to take into account the upstream energies used to produce those fuels. So residual oil and diesel are going to come from a conventional crude petroleum pathway. So when calculating, when using them in a process, we need to take into account all these three upstream energies contributing to the production of those fuels. Same thing for natural gas, same thing for electricity. Obviously, the upstream pathways are going to be different for the different fuels. And it's especially important to note something like the electricity, in which there is a large variation of the upstream energy, and also especially of the types of energy used in the upstream, depending on where the electricity is being used. What is being shown here, I believe it's our default, which is the average of U.S. grid generation, which is about half coal, 21% nuclear, 11% renewable, which is hydropower generation mostly, and some gas. But we also have the averages for each one of them of the electricity generation regions in the U.S., and the user can actually enter their own generation splits in order to see how different electricity mixes will affect final results. But it's important to consider electricity is a very tricky quote unquote fuel to consider in life cycle analysis. Next slide, number 19, shows a few of the definitions we use in GREET. Important because they might mean exactly different things that they mean in other contexts. Efficiency is always for example, in this case, electric energy efficiency. So it's the output of energy per the fuel energy into the input. Yield would be, for example, in this case, on a volumetric basis, gallons of ethanol per bushel of corn. That's something that could be a yield in GREET. Energy intensity, payload, transportation distance are also important concepts when looking at transportation processes. Transportation processes are quite important and tricky to model in a life cycle analysis tool such as GREET for fuels. They might have an important contribution to the final result, but they also have high variability. For example, it's fairly easy to understand that conventional crude is going to have an important contribution of transportation processes. If you think of a barrel of Middle Eastern crude being processed in a Gulf of Mexico refinery in the U.S., there is a largish contribution from the transportation step from the Middle East to the Gulf of Mexico on a tanker ship. Other fuels, especially for example, natural gas, to avoid the issue of having an average of very different values, we actually have two different pathways. One focuses on North American natural gas, which has a small transportation step in the upstream, and non-North American natural gas, which would have to be compressed into liquefied natural gas, transported in a tanker ship, and then delivered, liquefied and delivered, that liquefied gasified and delivered while in the U.S. And we also have added non-conventional natural gas in this last version of GREET to look at gas coming from the new shale, the large amount of shale gas in the U.S. So we have added that, and we just had a paper comparing that to other natural gas and petroleum a few months ago. Next slide, slide number 20. Also, important to look at different types of process emissions in GREET. Number one is combustion emissions, which is the most straightforward one. So, you know, fuels are combusted in engines, boilers, turbines, and produce some emissions. These are fairly straightforward because there is an external fuel going into a process down to a technology that has an associated emission factor, and the emission is calculated. There are non-combustion emissions, which are harder to look at. For example, in processes such as steam methane reforming, natural gas, gas to liquid type of processes, there are emissions that do not come from a combustion process or combustion process technology. And the third one, the third type of category of emissions in GREET is the trickiest one, which is what we call other emissions or from internally produced fuels. These are harder to quantify because they do not come from an external fuel that is then known. A good example of those are emissions produced in processes such as petroleum refining, in which a part of the emission or part of the energy comes from combusting an internally produced fuel. So some of the lower or less useful fuels might be consumed internally for process heat. We have to consider those emissions since they produce both, carbon dioxide, so greenhouse gas, and other criteria pollutants when quantifying the total emissions of a process and therefore of a pathway. But we do not have a definition of an external process fuel coming in, so we have to be very careful when modeling processes in this manner. Slide number 21, process-related parameters in GREET. Just to point out some of the main parameters we need to take into account when defining process. Input-output relations, such as efficiency, yield, energy intensity, co-product amounts, things like extra steam that can be used elsewhere, electricity, any other co-product, energy for carbon capture and sequestration, an important one when looking at things especially like Fischer-Tropsch processes, IGCC and the like, when looking at the reduction of greenhouse gas emissions by having a carbon capture and sequestration, it's important we have to look at the energy consumed. If it's a power plant, it's going to be a derating of the power plant. If it's not, in other cases, it's going to have an energy being used for being able to capture the carbon. For example, in a flue gas, there's going to be a large amount of energy being used to separate the CO2 from the amine carbon used on the carbon capture in order to have a more pure CO2 stream for sequestration. Market shares of feedstock or product, that's an important one. For example, looking at petroleum, what is conventional versus oil sands, they have a quite different upstream makeup, so that the energy used to obtain one barrel of crude by conventional methods and the energy, the emissions versus the same barrel for oil sands is very different. And oil sands derived crude is very different. Conventional gasoline to reformulated gasoline also will have different amount of energy and emissions in their manufacturing. The electricity generation mix, as I mentioned before, is quite different. Different type of technology shares, very hot topic in the ethanol, corn ethanol, energy consumption, the dry mill versus wet mill process share. One is much more energy intensive than the other. Those are things we need to look at and need to be very explicit about what goes into our simulations, and at the same time allow users to play with those shares in order to for them to be able to simulate what they want. Slide number 22. Now, a look at what is known as a pathway. So a pathway is a collection of processes from starting with a feedstock, a number of processes ended up with a vehicle type of process traveling a distance. That's what's known as a pathway in GREET. So some of these processes might be manufacturing processes. Some of them might be transportation process. For example, as I showed before, when looking at conventional crude, you have an upstream process in which crude oil is recovered from the ground, but the transportation process to this crude oil is taken to a refinery. That's another process at a refinery. Then it's going to have another transportation of conventional fuels into distribution centers, and finally there's going to be a vehicle-type process in which this fuel is combusted. The way we look at pathways in GREET is by looking at not only the energy used in the process itself, but as I mentioned, also the energy used in the upstream steps of the fuel being consumed in its process. So in this case, process number one is the one being fed by a feedstock. So we have to consider the upstream energy needed to produce the feedstock. And then in that process, plus any consecutive one, we need to look at the energy brought in by any process fuels and input materials, is what is labeled as X, Y, and Z here in this schematic, plus all the upstream contributions for any of those fuels and material inputs. GREET, everything is shown as normalized to one unit of feed. So it's important to note that the upstream for the feed needs and should only be taken into account on the first process of the pathway, otherwise we would be double counting it. Slide number 23, process food product handling methodology, like was mentioned before. Co-product handling, so there are several methodologies implemented in GREET. Displacement of an equivalent product, allocation, both by energy mass and their market value, and hybrid, meaning a combination of the ones above. I'll explain these a little bit more in detail. Just some characteristics for those of you not so familiar with these different methods. Displacement means that a production of a co-product displaces the manufacturing of the same co-product by more conventional methods. So therefore, one takes the credit for not having to manufacture that co-product differently. Allocation is a simpler to use, but not applicable in some cases. You know, displacement, as you can imagine, is fairly data intensive because you have to model not only how you manufacture that co-product in your process, but also how you would otherwise do it to get the burdens from that case. It's important to note that there's no right way to do this. Which one is the most appropriate is open to debate for each specific case. So GREET is a tool that doesn't want to take, in a way we want to show all the methodologies and for people to understand what the consequences of each one is. In that regard, next slide number 25 showed results from a paper that Michael Young, the manager here of the systems assessment section, my boss here, Dargon, put out this last year, actually, that illustrates the consequences or the different results that using different co-product allocation or co-product allocation schemes can have on the results of life cycle analysis, in this case, GHG emissions for biofuels using different methods. It's remarkable, for example, if you look at the renewable diesel to the right. So renewable diesel, it's differentiated from biodiesel is basically diesel that is comparable on a molecular level to conventional diesel, but it comes from renewable resources. So things like hydro processing of vegetable oils using, for example, UOP's ecofining process or some of those. So you can see that if we look at a displacement methodology, we have a net reduction of greenhouse gas, not only a reduction, but a negative greenhouse gas emissions. While if we look by things like a hybrid or a market value allocation, we would have a positive well-to-wheels greenhouse gas emissions. So just to show how different the results are depending on the method chosen and the fact that there is no absolute there cannot be in an estimate absolute recommendations of which one is the one to use shows how difficult these issues are on how much art versus science one has to put into these processes. The next slide, just I'll go a little quick here, shows a little bit what I was mentioning, co-product displacement methodologies. So basically, in this case, we have a main product and co-product. So we allocate all the emissions and all the process fuel used to the main product, but we also give the main product credits for what would have been used for producing the co-product by conventional methods. So we say the co-product would have been made by conventional methods. We don't have to. So what would have been used for the co-product conventional methods is taken out of the burden of the main product. However, this is tricky, especially in cases of electricity that tends to give very good results. So it has to be used with care and justified properly. Next slide, number 27, shows allocation. In this case, only a fraction of the burden, both emissions and fuels, or so energy burden, is given to the main product and a fraction to the co-product. This allocation would be done by normally one of the main characteristics of both the main product and co-product, such as mass, energy, or market value. Energy is fairly straightforward when we're producing several fuels. But obviously, when the co-product is not a fuel and the main product is a fuel, it doesn't make much sense to do an energy allocation since the co-product would not have much allocated to it. But it could be a fairly expensive product, so it makes sense to do a market value allocation in some cases. But as I said, all these methods are incorporated in GREET. We offer a default that changes depending on the method. We are very explicit, which is our default for each process that allow the user to change it. Slide number 28, next one, just to illustrate that the main work, or one of the main things we do here at Argonne when developing GREET is trying to collect data. All the data used in GREET is open. That means we don't use proprietary data that we cannot share. So we all use data from the open literature, from process modeling, either our own or other people, but always open. We interact with companies. Sometimes their data is not proprietary and not very transparent. In those cases, that data is only used for us to understand process better, but we don't use it in the actual GREET data. So an important part of what we do is engage with the community and work it to understand the processes, to obtain better data, to work with people at all levels. Slide number 29.
Can I ask a quick question about the data?
Yes.
I've talked with some others at Argon more on the vehicle side that have said that where data is lacking, they tend to make assumptions that are a bit pessimistic in order to provide incentive for the industry to provide data. Is that true in the fuel cycle model as well, would you say?
I would say so. I would say so that we tend to be very conservative. I don't know that I would put it in those terms, but, you know, it's one of those things that if we don't have good data, we'll have to be very conservative. So if you as an industry know that the process is more efficient, you know, the only way that you can show it from us, and there's a lot of people looking at our data, is to give us good data and to share it with the community. So I would say that's kind of one of those things to try to get people to help us, but it's absolutely true. Okay. So the uncertainty, you know, there's two types of uncertainties in LCA, just to go very quickly. One is what is the subsystem uncertainty, so kind of, you know, what is the boundary, the treatment of the co-products, things that can be done in different ways. The other one is technical uncertainty. So there's an actual variation of the parameters, and that's what the stochastic simulation addresses. Just to make that issue that the stochastic shouldn't be seen as addressing the system uncertainties, but the actual technical uncertainties. The next two slides, I'll go over very quick. You have the slides so you can look. It results on a paper that is coming out soon comparing different vehicle and fuel options. Both for you know, some interesting results. I'm not going to stop there. Just the next two slides, 30 and 31. And, but I want to end with slide 32 just to show and sort of make sure that you understand that there's a large number of us here at Argon in our systems assessment group. Our group leader is Dr. Michael Wong. That are working in these issues. And I'm just one more of them, or one of the group, and my special focus is on biofuels and petroleum fuels modeling to generate the data and the LCA applications. But there's a large, you know, there's 11 permanent staff here working on LCA research and grid development, plus a number of postdocs, and we collaborate very much with other organizations in order to do that. Just as a clarification, this grid.net is the new version of grid, this new version in terms of new architecture. There's going to be a beta version coming out soon. It's not Excel-based, but it's .NET platform-based, and I'm sure it'll come out. It's quite a new, exciting development. And with this, I think I have a few extra slides that are part of the slide pack in case you guys want to see. But I appreciate very much the opportunity to talk to you, Mark Greet, and very much open to collaborating and working with people and helping. If any of you wanted to download Greet and start playing with it and looking at issues and how to use it in different environments would be great.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ignacio. I guess first let's thank Ignacio for it. Yeah. Okay, and we have just a little bit of time for questions, so further questions?
Maybe I have a quick question. On the process level, one of the issues I would think is that when you're comparing alternatives, how do you know you are, if you wish, you know, considering the, quote, best or the optimal flow sheet? Because, for example, since energy, as you were mentioning, is sort of the major component there, I mean, there could be, you know, I would think, and I've seen it, that in fact, significant differences, for example, whether it's corn-based ethanol or cellulosic ethanol, you know, on the energy consumption. Because, again, you know, some of these processes, especially the existing ones, you know, do tend to be the early ones, fairly energy intensive, whereas the more recent ones, and I think if you take the extra step, you can do a lot better. So do you have any way of considering the, or trying to identify what is hopefully the best design, at least in terms of energy?
Yes, and I think Nessie, you're pointing out a very important issue, and it's affecting us, and we're still fully trying to figure out how to be very explicit about this. I would say the main distinction is between existing processes and processes at the R&D stage. So some of the processes are either R&D or even pilot. So our fuel or our energy consumption would come from simulations and best estimates that are not very reliable. And obviously, whether one looks at a very efficient process versus some other version that is not so efficient, the results are going to be very variable. For existing processes, our approach is to actually go from industry surveys. So, for example, our corn ethanol, traditional fermentation, the dry mill versus wet mill, our results follow the surveys, the industry surveys. Okay, so we don't, our corn ethanol numbers do not follow either the best or worst technological values out there, but what is on the field and working right now. So one of the collaboration in this case with UIC and Bristol and at Chicago is with an economist, an agricultural economist there that actually surveys the different mills in the U.S. and surveys the energy consumption at the mills so that we can follow our energy consumption follows the actual industry trends. Same thing with our petroleum refining. We update it every few years or so with the data reported by EIA, so the Energy Information Agency, part of DOE, and the Refiners Association as far as actual fuel consumption at refineries. And so we follow the industry in those regards.
Yeah, thank you.
And we try to be very explicit. And if things, in cases when there are several very different processes, for example, in the ethanol case, we have a different process and pathway. We have a different process for corn ethanol versus cellulosic ethanol.
Okay. Other questions? Okay. And are there questions from the outside? Okay. I guess not. But let's thank Ignacio. Oh, one more question? Yes, Alex.
Is there any, like, cost information in Greek? So if someone were to design, like, a fuel pathway and say, I'm going to get hydrogen from here and I'm going to put it in fuel cell cars, there's some cost in addition to emissions?
Okay, did you hear the question, Ignacio?
I heard the question, yeah. Okay. We don't have any cost content in Greece. It's purely the energy consumption of the different kinds and emissions, greenhouse gas, and criteria pollutants. I think it would be fairly straightforward to add a cost component to it. I think we don't want to get in that area since, because of us, or especially Michael, is very sensitive in trying to stay away from any political debates to maintain our credibility as sort of a neutral party in the debate, especially in the greenhouse gas emissions and other criteria pollutants. So we offer the data that if other people wanted to do it, they're more than welcome to.
Okay. If no questions, then let's thank Ignacio again. Okay. Ignacio, thanks a lot. And we'll be posting your slides and really appreciate all of your work on this. It's been a great talk. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye-bye.
That's fine, yes.
All right. So, Bruno, a quick question. Mm-hmm. Do you want to handle... so I guess this goes... Ignacio?
Yeah.
This goes to Andrew, does it? Or... I mean, we have the audio and the...
Yeah.
And you have the slides.